Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to me on your Sunday evening. I really do appreciate that. Well, you know, we got a number of things to talk about today. I need to finish up from last week on the mass shooting statistics and giving you some more information on that. As you can see, it's been still all over the news. About these issues, about what happened, and last weekend, and we're also going to talk about, which we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, about disgruntled employees, what signals that you can look out for, and possibly some solutions, et cetera. So for those business owners out there, or quite frankly, coworkers, it doesn't make any difference. You know, keep an eye out. And then we're also going to talk about, because again, it's been all over the news, and I've been getting some inquiries from people regarding white supremacy versus white nationalists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, asking for some, you know, the opinions on that. And we're going to discuss that as well. But, you know, I like being fair and balanced. So we're also going to, because I got another inquiry, so we're also going to be talking about black nationalism and separatism as well. So, you know, these are all right now very, very emotional issues for people. The sad part about it is that I don't think it's going away anytime soon. And, you know, whatever the politicians are doing or not doing, I think some of it, you know, is also the media is going to keep this right in the front for the time being, because, quite frankly, there's nothing else going on. When something else goes on, I think they're going to change it, quite frankly. But before I forget, hey, next week we're going to have a very interesting show, people, so mark your calendars. I had told you a few weeks ago that we were going to be having a LA County deputy that's going to be actually talking about children and drugs and, you know, things that parents should look out for. They'll be talking about how these kids are actually hiding these drugs, the different types of drugs that the kids are using. So that's going to be a real good one. And that one also is going to be live on YouTube. So just to let you know that also. So we're going to have a lot of fun with it, but, you know, even though it's a very serious subject, and, you know, so stay tuned for that one. Again, we're living in very sensitive times, you guys, and we have to make sure, you know, I did a lot of training again this past week on active shooter training, and you could see it in the eyes of people, you know, and the questions that they ask, the concerns that we have out there. And, you know, I tell everybody, look, I don't want anybody being paranoid. I just want you being safe. It's safe. You just got to be paying attention, to your surroundings and things of that nature. And, you know, paying attention to those tips that we give. Anybody that has any questions, by the way, please feel free to call at 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And you can find that on our website also, in case you forget the number, didn't write it down. And you can also send me emails, which people do at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. And if you want to get my blog or my email blast about upcoming show topics, hey, just text us. Just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828. That's Potts Associates and text it to 22828. And just simply enter your email address and then you'll get the topics for the upcoming shows. All right? And one other thing, just to let you know, once again, as a reminder, and I want to thank those people that have bought my new book, by the way, Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips, Your Pocket Guide. It is available on www.lulu.com. So lulu.com, and it's only $7 plus shipping and handling, something around that nature, okay? All right, having said all of that, let's jump into it here. As always, I like to start off by reading my my emails first. So let's go. All right, Jim, here we go again with the gun control debate. Every time there is a shooting, the media and the politicians start clamoring about taking out guns away. Now they're taking out stricter background checks. The criminals and active shooters will still find a way, and innocent civilians will pay the price. Your thoughts, Gerard, Mobile, Alabama. Well, Gerard, I can tell you this. They are talking about it. Some of the politicians, they're all in recess. you know, for their summer break. But some of them are still speaking out about it. The president has spoken out about it, and they're talking about doing these additional, you know, laws. But I will point out that once again, every time there's a shooting, this is what they go through. And quite frankly, it ends up going nowhere. So I would encourage people, Gerard, to write to their congressman, et cetera, no matter what side of the aisle you're on, and express your views and try to put some pressure on them to do this. You know, so, you know, there's always the call for urgent action on gun control. And it looks like the members of Congress are weighing potentially bipartisan ideas to curb gun violence because of those shootings. You know, the ones in El Paso, Dayton, Ohio, and Gilroy, California. And when you look at that, look at that. You're talking three different states, guys. Now, one of the things I'm going to talk about after I do the emails, I'm going to give you some mass shooting statistics. And, you know, to give you an idea about all these different states that are involved in this. Now, from what I understand is that the legislative proposals that are going to be under consideration is going to be stronger background checks. And they're also talking about the red flag laws again, and that's to prevent those threatening harm to themselves or others from buying or possessing firearms, and bans on large capacity magazines or assault style firearms. Now, let's just take these separately for a second. Stronger background checks? I don't know if you've got a clean background check, how much stronger can it be? What difference does it make if you never committed a crime? And some of these individuals that have, in fact, done these shootings, they had clean background checks. So I don't know how much stronger you can make it. Now, the red flag laws is going to be interesting because that one is the one where they're talking about using that law to prevent harm to people, either to themselves or to others, and that would stop them from buying or possessing firearms or the large capacity magazines. Now, as what I don't understand is that, okay, that leads itself to me to a mental illness. And mental illness is always the issue that people always want to say these people must be mentally ill. But you could have a person that doesn't have any type of record of mental illness, or sometimes people snap for whatever reasons that they do. So I'm not so sure that that's going to truly help. We'll see. It's better than doing nothing. I will say that. But again, you're going to have the Second Amendment people jumping in. Gerard, I noticed that you talked about the fact that you're going to be concerned because they're going to take the guns away from the innocent people who have absolutely no thoughts of doing anything like this. And, you know, and I get it. You're saying that majority of people out there aren't doing this. So why are we going to penalize the ones, you know, who would never do something like this? Well, here's the deal. It only takes one to walk into a, you know, a mall, so to speak, or to do what some of these people have done. And you're talking about these high-capacity magazines. I'll say it again. I said it last week with the caller. I don't think those things and those automatic rifles need to be, you know, in the arms of civilians, in the hands of civilians, excuse me. I just don't believe that. So I don't know, Gerard. You know, we're going to wait and see what happens. Now, I will say that you may recall that, and I know that there are some who are pushing Congress to revive the assault weapons ban that President Bill Clinton signed into law. So when he was in office, there was something to that effect. Now, that expired in 2004. Well, that's almost 15 years ago, right? So that's a long time. Now, the problem is that they found that that ban really had mixed results. And it's been suggested that a prohibition of large capacity magazines could also help reduce shooting deaths. So if you get rid of those, that the amount of people that these people may kill would be greatly reduced. I'll tell you the real deal, the manufacturers. See, the manufacturers actually found a way to get around the ban. And as what they did, they simply made modifications to the guns so they weren't subject to the ban. And then they sold the parts for these as an aftermarket accessory. See, that's why it's very, very difficult, guys, that we're going to get rid of these things altogether. There's so many of those out there already. You got the aftermarket ban. So, Gerard, I appreciate what you're saying. You're saying that some of these people, they can go underground and get this and get it. So, you know, the gun control, you know, advocates, you know, are wasting their time because the end result may not be what the expectation is. So I get it, and only time will tell. But I think that the majority of people out there, and this is just my own opinion, want us to be able to do something about it. And I don't think it can just keep on going on the way that it is. And you know, maybe these laws don't include, you know, higher penalties, quite honestly, if anybody is selling in aftermarket or they're trying to get around whatever laws they are that come out. So I don't know. We'll see. At any rate, those are my thoughts. You asked me my thoughts, Gerard. They don't 100% agree with you, but there it is. Okay, next one. Jim, I saw in the news where a serial killer, Michael Gargiola, killed a woman back in 2001, and they finally caught him. And his defense attorneys are arguing or have argued that he was basically asleep at the time of this murder of this individual and some others. Is it really true he could get off with a defense like that? Susan, Marina Del Rey, California. Well, Susan, look, defense attorneys are going to do their job. You know, if there's anything out there, anything that they can use, they are definitely going to use it. Now, for those of you who do not know what she's talking about, they're talking about this guy was nicknamed the Boy Next Door Killer. And he was charged with murders of two California women in their homes and even a 2000 attack on a woman who was actually survived, where he had stabbed her 8 times in a Santa Monica apartment. Now, this guy definitely has some issues, but he's facing attempted murder charges from those as well, with the attempts, and then murder, of course, from the ones that he did. Now, here's the other thing. He can face the death penalty if he's convicted. The sad part about it is, once again, this is California. We've talked about the death penalty. So what? If he gets convicted and he gets the death penalty, and now we've got a current governor who is going to shut down any of the death penalty, executions while he's in office, then it's like it all goes for naught anyway. So the taxpayers, if this guy gets convicted, the taxpayers are going to be the ones that are paying for this while he sits very comfortable in his cell, like so many other people do on death row. They're on the internet, they have their rights, and some of these guys have all the comforts of home. You know, look at Peterson, look at some of these other guys. These guys are meeting people online, getting married. I mean, all kinds of things. So I'm not sure where it's going to go, whether you say he's going to get off, but I don't know that he's going to get off. Now, you know, one of the other things that they said that he had amnesia, so he didn't remember any of these things. So his attorneys wanted to argue that because of this so-called condition that he have, that he couldn't premeditate and he can't deliberate. And in order to have murder, those are the requirements. So that's why they say premeditated murder, guys, which is first-degree murder. It's a capital offense, you know. And did he deliberate on it? Did he think about it? You know, did he plan it out? If he planned it out, that's deliberation. So I don't know. You know, again, because it's California, I mean, yes, do I want him to go to jail? Yes. Do I think he's going to get off? I don't know that he's going to get off or not. But you never know, you know. Some people have gotten off in the past that have created, you know, that may have committed crimes. I'm not going to mention anybody's name who just got out of jail. But here's the deal. It happens. So criminal justice system isn't perfect, Susan. We'll just wait and see what happens. Third one. Okay, here we go. Jim, I saw your email blast about the upcoming topics and saw your discussion was going to include white supremacists and white nationalists. Aren't there black separatists and nationalists? To be fair, your discussions should be a little bit more mixed, all right? So shouldn't you talk about the black ones as well? Just saying, not hating. That's how he signed it. Just saying, not hating. Look, you know, I specifically read that one because I understand and I want people to know that I'm being fair and balanced. I'm not leaning one way or another regarding this. And yes, there have been situations where it's just not white supremacists, white nationalists, and yes, there have been black nationalists and black separatists. So is what I did. I do have some information on that as well. And since it was brought up in an email, I'll give you, and later in the show, I told you already I was going to talk about white supremacists, the definitions, white nationalists, et cetera. So what I'll do is take a moment to address this person's concern and tell you before we get into the other piece about black nationalism and also black separatism. Now, let me just tell you, there are similarities between black nationalism and black separatism. They understand that they both aim for the rights of blacks, and there's very few differences. And let me just tell you, all black separatists are black nationalists, but not all black nationalists are black separatists. I know what you're saying, huh? What? Here we go. Black separatists believe that black people should be physically separated from other races, primarily whites. Black separatists would want a separate nation for black people. And let me just tell you, that's not a new concept. All right? Now, this is slightly different from black nationalists because black nationalists do believe in separation, but not physical separation. Okay? And the black nationalists focus more on black pride, justice, and identity. All right? Their belief is that blacks should be proud of their own skin, heritage, and beauty, which a lot of blacks are. Okay? So to say that they're black nationalists, I don't think that's necessarily as a negative. That's just taking pride in who you are. I mean, I went to, you know, an all-black university, Howard University, in the early 70s, and black pride was something that was instilled, not necessarily by the university, but by the people that we were going to school with, and the professors, etc. Now, with black nationalists, their belief is that blacks should be proud of their own skin, as I told you, but they also believe that there should be justice for black people, especially in America. Now, in the past, just to refresh your memories, I've talked about this before about black nationalist organizations. That you got to understand that includes the Nation of Islam and the new Black Panther Party that's now reemerging. Now, we had the Black Panther Party from before. And for those of you that are probably a little bit more in my age group, you might remember our names like Eldridge Cleaver, Bobby Seale, and also Huey Newton. They were the ones that basically were the founders of the original Black Panther Party. And, you know, they were advocates. You're talking about the late 60s, early 70s. They were there. And Eldridge Cleaver went on to become a prominent member of the Black Panthers. And, you know, he's had different titles and things of that nature. He has now passed away. And let's see. Bobby Seale is still alive, and I believe he's an educator now, and he still is pretty consistent with what he believes in terms of the black nationalism. Now, there were also black separatists. They were both, from what I understand, and as I recall. Now, I will tell you that they created what they call the 10-point platform. Now, even though they were black separatists, black nationalists. And by the way, before I forget, this is not a new concept, as I just told you, because this goes all the way back to when Marcus Garvey in the early 1920s, even Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln had the plans. He was going to, you know, try to have the newly freed slaves, basically giving them an out to be able to get out of the country. And he was arranging with Mexico, but that fell through. And there were discussions about Liberia, which Marcus Garvey picked up on in the 1920s. At any rate, look, these guys laid out the 10-point platform, okay? And the reason why they did it was because, you know, to be able to help black people in their minds. And their points were simple. You know, they indicated that they wanted freedom. They wanted the power to determine the destiny of black people. They wanted to be able to have full employment. Now, you think about these things, and some of these issues are still some of the issues that are being argued today. They wanted an end to the robbery by the capitalists of the black community. Well, they were just feeling that everything was being taken from blacks. They wanted decent housing. Nothing wrong with that. They wanted education. Nothing wrong with that. And they wanted all black men to be exempt from military service. That's problematic. I don't agree with that, obviously. That, you know, because everybody, all males when they turn 18 have to, you know, especially at that time, had to register for the draft. So, you know, and they talked about the other things about the end of police brutality and murdering of black people. I mean, some of these things are the same things that are being argued to this day. And I guess from that perspective, those things are sad. But they also wanted black men in federal, state, county, and city prisons and jails to be released. And that wasn't going to happen, obviously. So, look, you know, to answer your question, you know, I am trying to be fair with this. So there's the information on black nationalists and black separatists. Unfortunately, we don't hear about that as much. So that's another reason why I wanted to read this email to be fair to both sides here. And I say sides, meaning you think about the black community versus the white community. And now we also have the Latino community. but you really don't see as much, you know, from that standpoint right now, you know, in terms of these types of organizations. I mean, you know, I was the Cesar Chavez, I guess, led, you know, the Latinos in trying to get certain rights and everything for them as well. So at any rate, look, that's what it is. I'm trying to be fair. That's the information on the black nationalists and black separatists. And then you'll be able to determine from the, you know, the definitions of the other ones when I give it later on in the show. Okay, look, last week we did not have a chance to talk about the mass shootings. And just understand something. There's many definitions of mass shootings. You know, it's really a broad topic that can be very specific as well. So it depends. Now, on the news, when they talked about mass shootings for 2019, they had mentioned there was only like four or five. I'm trying to remember what the number was. But there's been much more mass shootings than that. And the reason why they have a lower number is because they don't give you all of the statistics. Well, I'm going to give you all of the statistics so that you can fully understand that this is more serious than just the situations that happened in Gilroy, El Paso, Texas, and also in Dayton, Ohio. So let's just go through this, and I'm going to kind of go backwards with some dates, because these are some things I'm getting ready to tell you that weren't even on the air. Now, I never heard them, and I look out for these kind of things. So July 27th, now how long ago was that? 13 people were shot, all right, at a playground in Brownsville. This is in Brooklyn, New York, by the way. So you had 13 people shot. Now, understand something, because even though it was at a playground, a mass shooting is where a lot of people gather. So I grew up in New York, especially in Bedford-Stuyvesant in Brooklyn, and we had a park right across the street. There's a lot of people that go to those parks in the city, all right? So they had a shooting, 13 people, all right? Only one died, fortunately, but the other 12 were injured as well. So now watch the dates, because what we're talking about, you know, with these shootings last weekend, this was in Brooklyn, New York. Let's move to another one. July 13th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Here we are in another state. 7 people wounded in a shooting during a neighborhood basketball game. Now you look at that and say, well, okay, well, wait a minute. You know, what was that? You know, it got out of hand. Look, remember something. Mass shooting is a mass shooting. All right? Mass shooting is a mass shooting. I told you before, it's 3 people or more that were shot at, wounded, or whatever the case, or killed, you know, whatever the case may be. So these are the things that you don't necessarily hear. And you may look at that and say, well, that's a neighborhood squabble. No, it's still a mass shooting, though. Understand that. And again, that was in Philly, all right, July 13th. Did you hear about it on the news? Probably not. See, this is what I'm talking about when I say that we don't always get all of the information from the media. The media likes to sensationalize things, all right? So that, to me, that they have a tendency to pick and choose in terms of what it is that they are, you know, broadcasting. Let's go back. June 29th, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Now, this was when it was outside of a nightclub in Baton Rouge. 7 people shot, all right? And that was at a nightclub. So that's not the first time we've heard about nightclubs. There was the Pulse nightclub. There was the Bar and Grill out there in Thousand Oaks in California. So you got to understand something. When you're at those clubs and these different places, you're as susceptible to a shooting as if you're in a mall these days. None of this is new. These are the things that I try to preach to people, so to speak, about always making sure that you're aware and where you're sitting. Know where the exits are. Know where the restrooms are. You know, keep an eye on things, you know, to know what's going on around you. Let's keep going. Because if you notice, I'm giving you all different states. June 28th, Atlanta, Georgia. 7 people wounded. This was a drive-by shooting. That one involved 2 vehicles. That's kind of borderline if you want to talk about a mass shooting, but it's still 7 people. So because of 7 people, it's still classified as a mass shooting. Here's another one in Atlanta, Georgia, on June 27th. Drive-by shooting. Now, to me, the reason why I'm mentioning these two, those could have been related. Because if you notice, June 27th, and the other one was June 28th. So there could be a gang affiliation. Now, I don't know for a fact, but that's what it sounds like to me. All right? And when we start talking about active shooters on the show, I've said it before, anything that's gang-related may not be considered an active shooter situation. All right? So when I look at this one, I'm making the assumption that these were, affiliated. All right. Now let's go to another state, June 23rd. Listen to these dates, guys. These dates are not that far apart. All right. Once again, it's at a bar. 11 people shot. All right. The person who they don't know, all right, opened fire on patrons at a local bar. Now, that, once again, large group of people. See, look, this is what we have to be aware of out there. You can't ever think this can't happen to you. These people are out having a good time, whatever the case may be. You can't afford to take the chance. I'm not telling you don't go out, all right? Some people are telling me, you know what? It's not even worth going out anymore. I'm not necessarily saying that. Because one thing about Americans is that we're not going to let terrorists, you know, deter us from, you know, living as close to a normal life as possible. Because we can be stubborn in our ways for sure. And so, you know, it's difficult just to hold up. But these fears are being instilled in people. Look what happened at with Times Square. I think it was a few days ago. It was a motorcycle or a car that did there was a backfire. And everybody starts running and screaming, okay, and running and trampling each other. It was a backfire. Now, you know, that's a sign of the times. That's a sign of the times. Before you start screaming and running, at least make a proper assessment for a second as to what that may have been. Every loud noise is not a gunshot. All right? You know, backfires are backfires. Have you never heard of backfire before? At any rate, hey, let's keep moving. June 20th, this one's in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Here we go. 10 people outside of a nightclub. All right, and I'm skipping. All right, the dates I'm giving you, there are other dates in between it. I'm giving you ones that are seven or more. But I have plenty sitting in front of me where it's three or more. All right, and some a little bit less than that, but those to me are not mass shootings. All right, so here we go. Outside of another nightclub. Now, to me, this one's sad. This one's in Philly. Okay, another one in Philly. Seven people. You ready for this one? A graduation party. All of the victims were between 15 and 17 years of age. Now, that's not totally surprising. It was a graduation party about how old these people were. But I don't know the circumstances of that one, quite frankly. Somebody may have been upset about something. I don't know. I mean, it's clearly somebody was upset about something. Or was it just an active shooter situation? That one, to me, sounds like it was personal. All right? You know, so maybe they didn't graduate. I don't know. Maybe they were given bad news. Here's another one, Shreveport, Louisiana, another nightclub one. When I look down this list, I am seeing a lot of nightclubs, guys. That nightlife sometimes can be really bad. Chicago is another one. All right, Chicago's had their issues on the news. You hear about every weekend they have a large contingency of people that are being injured. All right, with shootings and things. Let's get out of June. We've been in June and July, believe it or not. Now, let's go to May. There's the Virginia Beach shooting. You might remember that one. Gunman killed 12 people and injured four others at a city public works building. All right? And that particular one, the gunman died at the scene after being shot by police. But that one had 17, like I said. So, you know, that's a place of business. Let's keep moving. Trenton, New Jersey, May 25th. All right, 10 people wounded. Where was that? Guess. Another bar. I don't know. These days, maybe it's not worth, you know, this nightlife and heading out to these bars and things of that nature. I'm not telling you not to go. I'm not telling you, you know, what to do with your life. But if you're there, make sure you're sitting by an exit. Make sure you're sitting closer to the restroom. You know, those are the kind of tips I give out all the time. Those are the kind of tips you'll also find in that book I just told you about that you can get at lulu.com. Just go there, just type in my name, James Potts, and you'll see the book. Okay, Alabama, 9 people, all right? Now, that particular one was another one that was a graduation party, apparently. I don't know what it is with these graduation parties. Well, alcohol, maybe alcohol's involved. I don't know. Once again, I look at those and say, are the parents doing what they're supposed to do here? Okay, I'm just giving you, just going back a few months, guys. And let's see, the last one I'll give you was in Colorado, because you should be aware of this one. That was May 7th, and that was the one with the STEM school, Highlands Ranch shooting. All right? So you know that one. It was 9 people that were that were shot. Unfortunately, only one student was killed. But remember, that was the one where the, as I recall, that was the one where the three students turned around and said that they were going to do something, and they jumped on the guy. One of the students that jumped on the shooter was killed in the process. All right, so he was definitely a hero from that standpoint, because they didn't want their fellow students getting killed. Look, I can go through this list and keep going. The point I wanted you to understand is that these things are taking place all over the country. All right? So don't think because you're in a small hamlet that you're safe either. Now, again, look at Gilroy. All right? Festival has been around forever. And now they turned around and did something like this. Well, okay. Let's keep moving. I got another email that I didn't read on the air, because I had said in the previous week that I was going to talk about some security measures or you know, preparing for these outside venues. You know, how do you prepare? And we never had a chance to get to that one, so they asked me to come back to that one, which is what I'm going to do now. Look, these outside venues, guys, when you're out there for these concerts and things of that nature, or if you're the person that's in the planning stages of these things, all right, so I need to separate these two things out. The people planning these events, they need to develop the relationships with local law enforcement, and that includes the fire, include businesses in the area, all of that, all right? So for those of you that are involved in planning these, and let me tell you, this can include family reunions also. There's a lot of gatherings for family reunions. I mean, any of these kind of large gatherings. Concerts, the fairs, these different kinds of festivals. They have the strawberry festival. They have the shrimp festival. I mean, all these kind of things is what you have to be careful about. You know, my wife and I just got back from South Carolina not too long ago, and Buford has their annual festival, and it's 10 days. It's pretty nice. But the whole time we were there, what did we do? We sat to the outside versus the inside. These are the things that we did. You know, I sat there paying attention. I mean, there's different events on different nights. But people bring their chairs out there. They sit on this lawn with this big stage out there. All right, now there's not much cover. And that's the word, cover and barrier. So when you're out there at these main festivals like this, you need to always be thinking about, where can I go if something happens? All right, and don't sit to the inside of these events. Sit to the outside of these events, or stand to the outside of these events. All right. Getting back to the people that are planning these events, understand that you've got to clarify the emergency responsibilities and other responsibilities related to the venue security. All right. Now, these days, that's probably easy. But what I don't see is them letting people know about what to do in the event of an issue. Because a lot of times, even with this festival I was just telling you about, yeah, there was technically, they had it all using chain link fences around, because they want to make sure everybody paid to get in. Well, if something happens, you're kind of trapped in the middle of that. All right? So, to me, I think that those things are not very well planned out from that perspective. All right? Now, they did have the local law enforcement team there. That's true. The Buford Police Department. And they had them walking around inside of the premises. But even at that, I don't think I saw more than four of them, you know, the whole time I was there. Now, the other thing is plan developments for security, emergency responses, the hospitals, things of that nature. So you always want to talk about your hospitals. Get on the phone to your hospitals. Let the hospitals know that you're having an event, okay, and that so they should prepare. These organizations I'm talking about, the fire department, the police department, the local hospitals and medical facilities, they're waiting. So, you know, chances are they've all been trained in this. So the developers of these programs need to reach out to these different places. And for those of you that are attending these things, understand those systems have already been in place. Your responsibility might be different than theirs. All right? They're in a rescue mode. Okay? You know, to me, and well, the police department's in a prevention mode also. Okay? But you need to be in an awareness mode. You need to be paying attention. You need to think about your own security and the security of your family. For those of you that are the heads of the household, you know, You huddle together. You plan when you get there. What should we do in the event of? Plan it. Okay, when you get there. All right, say, okay, this is what we're going to do if something happens. All right. And for those of you that are setting all of this up, you make sure that you're training your staff and your volunteers. Do not forget about the volunteers. The volunteers need to know as well, all right, even though they're not part of a regular staff. You go to a lot of these different places and venues, and they use these outside security companies, which is okay. But you make sure that they have been trained what to do if, because that's important also. Because those aren't people that are normally armed. So what's the plan? All right, what do they know? So for those of you that are coordinating these projects and you hire these security firms, you know, they need to be having a meeting with the local law enforcement that's probably going to be there, because they can be an extension of them in terms of helping people to get out, or you know, and directing people. So make sure that you do that. So you're talking about a pre-planning stage, what to do when you're there, you know, how are they informing the people there about the easy exits, this is the way out, etc. And also for the people that are attending, you know, just don't rely on that. You sit down there with your family or somebody, whoever you go there with, hey, what would we do if? All right? That's what's important. Okay. And there should be signs up, all right, showing the emergency exits, you know, et cetera. I always say also, be alert to signs of trouble, guys. You know, these potential warning signs, you know, you could see if you just walk around, or look around rather, you can see somebody that's increasingly erratic, you know, somebody's, you know, being extremely aggressive. Some type of hostile behavior might come out. Drug and alcohol. You know, a lot of these venues serve alcohol. Okay, alcohol gets blamed for a lot of things. But I mean, I remember the Dodgers. The Dodgers were having a problem with that a couple of years ago. They were serving so much alcohol, and you had all this violence that was going on. Some places have cut back at some of those venues about how much alcohol is being served. So you need to take that into consideration also. It's not necessarily just behavior from an active shooter. It could be people out of control because of alcohol as well. All right. So anyway, you keep an eye out. All right. Now, I try to get people to understand also that there's no 100% protections, guys. We can look at these tips because, you know, it's hard to predict the future, but it's easy to prepare for the future, all right, to prepare for the unknown. Can't predict the unknown, but we can prepare for the unknown. And these tips that I'm giving you are just simple tips for some of these things that you can utilize, but please understand that, you know, none of this is 100%, but I say it really does fall back to you and getting yourself into a mindset that, you know, this is what we need to do now. We are living in different times. We need to sit down and think about these things, the what happens if, all right? Okay, so at any rate, so I wanted to make that up because somebody had asked me to go over those things, so there it is. Okay. All right. Now, taking that into consideration, I want to talk about this business about white supremacy. Once again, this is a very, very touchy subject, all right? I think that there's a lot of political fallout with all of this, both sides of the aisle, whatever, people pointing fingers. The reality is this issue of white supremacy and white nationalism has been around, you guys, for a very long time. It is not new. So let's start off. I just want you to know that the ideological foundation of white supremacy, guys, actually goes back to the 17th century. Yep, way back, all right? Now, for some of you, that's probably not entirely surprising. So those people that are pointing fingers, you know, at people now, understand this is not new. Now, let me just tell you, white supremacy, all right, is the racist belief that white people are superior to people of other races and therefore should be dominant over them. Now, that little small definition probably, once again, does not surprise you. But you also have to take into consideration that the term is also typically used to describe a political ideology that perpetuates and maintains the social, political, historical, or institutional domination by white people. All right? And again, I'm not out here trying to incite riots, you guys, with this information. The reason why I'm giving you this is because of the fact that it's been all over the news talking about white supremacy and white nationalism. The person that walked in and wanted, wrote in and wanted to know about black nationalism. These are all, you know, ideological thought processes about one group thinking, you know, about, you know, the genocide of their own group, quite frankly, which is what one of the issues is with the white supremacists. But look, let me just tell you that in the academic uses, particularly in uses which draws on critical race theory, the term white supremacy can also refer to a political or socioeconomic system in which white people enjoy a structural advantage, so to speak, over other people, over minorities. That's why you hear that expression about, oh, they are the privileged few, so to speak. So that's where you get the white supremacy from. Now, let me just tell you that when you think about that, you put that in conjunction with white nationalism. Now, white nationalism is a type of nationalism or pan-nationalism which espouses the belief that white people are a race and seeks to develop and maintain a white national identity. There are those whites out there, guys, who honestly believe that they are, how do I put this, facing genocide, white genocide, because of the fact that the numbers of the minorities are starting to increase to a level where they are no longer in the majority, they're in the minority. Now, I will tell you that the Ku Klux, you may have heard me on the show before talk about this, that the Ku Klux Klan started that way because they thought that they were being pushed out of the South, you know, in certain political positions and things of that nature during Reconstruction. And quite frankly, there was some validity to that, but hey, to the victor goes the spoils. So when the North went down there, this is the way that they wanted it set up. Excuse me. Okay, so look, analysts describe white nationalism as overlapping with white supremacy, guys. All right? So these things, as far as I'm concerned, are interchangeable. I think they're the same thing. I mean, last week, I think when I was speaking to the caller last week, we talked about white supremacy versus white nationalism. And, you know, upon further research, I think it is. It's an overlapping term. Look, my belief is very simple. All of these beliefs are wrong, okay, whether it's black nationalism, black separatism, white nationalism, white separatism. Look, if we keep these types of organizations or this type of mindset, because some of these, it's not that they get together and have some meetings. Some of them do. Don't get me wrong. Okay, the Ku Klux Klan does things like that. But some of this now with the use of the Internet, this information is out there. So here's a guy sitting at home that's looking at all of this and listening to all of this, and now he forms his own ideologies like the shooter in El Paso. You know, he said the reason why, you know, he was targeting, he called them Mexicans. He was targeting Mexicans. And he didn't like the fact that they were going to be getting free health care and all these other things. And so he's targeting a group. But it's not been shown that he was a part of an organized, you know, situation. It's just that he's picking this up off of things that he has read, seen on the Internet, et cetera, things that maybe he's seen on the news. So that's what makes these kind of things so difficult. And I don't know that there's an easy solution to this. Because as much as we would like to think that we have to speak out against this, I already told you, it's been around since the 17th century. This is not going away. It's not. People's thought processes on some of this, you could turn around and say this guy was a sick individual. Well, you know, that may be true. I don't know. So now are we saying that he's mentally ill? Because if he's mentally ill, you know, does he have a defense to his case? So, again, guys, I think the whole thing really boils down to the fact that we need more of a unification of all of the races, okay, and everybody stop drawing lines in the sand regarding who we are. You know, we're all Americans. So why do we have to have these little pigeonholes and all the rest of this stuff where we're clearly being kept separate by some of these classifications that are given to us by the government? So At any rate, look, I wanted to at least touch on that because somebody asked me to touch on it. There it is, white nationalism, white separatism, in my opinion, black separatism, black nationalism. You know the nationalism piece, to me, just speaks about pride. And I don't think there's anything wrong with pride, you know, feeling prideful for whoever you are, whatever your background is. But the part that I differ about is if you take that to another level and violence is attached to it, because, you know, I am not in favor of people engaging in violence against one group versus another group, because that's not going to work for us. Okay, having done that one, all right, you got that information now, you asked me, you got it. Now, the other thing that I wanted to talk about were helpful tips to manage a disgruntled employee at work. Look, I think we've all had them. You know, we've all seen disgruntled employees. Sometimes they say they're unmotivated, they decline to join in on the team activities, and don't seem to respect the company very much. You know, and look, don't get me wrong. These are individuals that could be amazing at what they do. Or maybe the company can't afford to lose that particular employee. So even though they're a little disgruntled person, the company likes the quality of their work, so they end up keeping them. Now, often a passionate employee loses some of their gusto, suddenly becoming a disgruntled employee. And now that person becomes, you know, the employee from hell. I think we've all had them, all right? Now, I will send out to the managers and say, look, no matter what the circumstances, your job as a manager is to deal with disgruntled employees. So that's what you have to think about, managers, all right? It's your skills, in my opinion, that could help, you know, resolve some of these matters before they get out of hand. And now all of a sudden you've got a, you know, you've got an active shooter coming in. Now, let's look at some basic things here. The dictionary defines disgruntled as displeased and discontented and sulky and even peevish. P-E-E-V-I-S-H, peevish. Now, look, I get it. You know, that type of person, who wants them working around other people? They're poisoning the well, so, you know, so to speak. You know, but they're there. All right. Now, we all realize that when we have these type of employees in our workplaces, they're detrimental to the company's culture. They spread negative energy, they promote complaining, and they encourage others to forget about getting things done. All right, those are signs of a disgruntled employee. And like I said, they're out there. They're out there. Now, I will tell you, for you California employers or managers, be careful, because under California law, you cannot take any action against an employee for complaining about working conditions. So it's a fine line there. So I will give you that note. Now, let's talk about some obvious signs that this individual, you may have a disgruntled person. The lack of, you know, lack of motivation, excitement, or passion. Right? Showing up late and taking long lunches. Now, this business about showing up late, sometimes people think that, you know, showing up late. Well, there's a lot of people who show up late because that's who they are. Absenteeism and tardiness is the number one reason why people get terminated in this country, and it crosses all different lines. So even though I give you that one about showing up late, that doesn't make the person, you know, a total disgruntled person, all right? But the person who also doesn't participate in meetings, stands off to themselves, you know, peer-poor relationships, those are the kind of things that we kind of scratch our heads on, and we look for those situations. So just to let you know about that. You know, it's the same person that's always talking about policies or projects that they're working on, always in a negative way. Everything they say is negative. Negative, negative, negative. Now, they may even be going through a personal crisis of sorts. Remember what I told you about that? If somebody's going through a personal crisis, you can listen to them, you can be compassionate, but don't give them any kind of advice. Because if it falls through, they may come back looking for you. Or if you give them advice and now they go home with your name on their lips, now that person comes up there looking for you. So, look, those are some of the signs. You know, it's not inclusive of everything. But if you do get a disgruntled employee, listen, for those of you that are managers or supervisors out there or even coworkers, because let's face it, disgruntled employees that become active shooters, they come back there and start shooting up the place. That may include you, all right? So sometimes it's okay to find out why they're not happy. What's going on? Why are you unhappy? It's okay to talk to them. You've got a vested interest, in my opinion, as well. And they may listen to you before they listen to a manager or supervisor. So look at it that way. All right? So find out why they're unhappy. Ask. And do me a favor. Just try to listen, you know. Listen. It's okay. Sometimes that's all people want. nobody would listen to me. Right? Now, you got to make a decision. You got to decide if it's about them or it's about you. Because I'm going to tell you something. When things go wrong, it's easy to blame the employee. All right? And I'm talking from a managerial perspective. So you want to make sure that you, as a manager or supervisor, is also doing things the right way. Okay? Or you as an individual, if you're having a personality conflict with this person. Because once again, when they come back into the work environment, who do they look for? Managers, supervisors, and anybody else that created, you know, a problem for them. And what I'll tell you is that, look, be professional. Handle it professionally. Talk to them. Remain professional. Don't let it fester. And keep it private, managers and supervisors. So if you're talking to this person, don't be talking to them out in the open. That just embarrasses people and makes them madder. Take them into a private office. And one thing I'll tell you, I'll put my other hat on for a second. Make sure you document everything that you have these discussions. All right? So just listen to them. Try to come up with some solutions in terms of what they're upset about. All right? Okay. Listen, that just gives you some tips and everything that I wanted you to understand about disgruntled employee. And again, nothing is written in the stone. All right? Okay, don't forget, next week, like I said, we may, in fact, have a special guest, and that will be on YouTube. And for those of you that have children, this is going to be a particularly important show for you. All right? Okay, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week, and if you like what you heard, do me a favor and spread the word. And by the way, do me another favor. Go to lulu.com. and buy that book, because it's really good safety tips in there, and it's very inexpensive. But until then, be aware, be vigilant, be safe, but more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Talk to you next week. Be safe.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.